We're up to Parashat Vayetze. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva and he's headed to Haran. He suddenly realizes he passed that important place where his father was bound on the altar. He rushes back. The sun sets unexpectedly early and he takes some of the rocks from the place. He goes to sleep and he sees in his dream that Hashem is standing over him. Hashem tells him, I am Hashem, the God of Avram, Yitzchak, the land you're lying on, I'm going to give you and your children. Your children will spread out in all directions. You will be blessed by all the families of the land. I'm with you. I'm going to protect you wherever you go. I'm bringing you back here. I'm not going to leave you until I fulfill what I promised you. And so Yaakov had this dream, right? He sees a ladder, angels going up and down, and Hashem's on top of the ladder and gives him all this wonderful news. And he gets up and he says, wow, what an exceptional place this is. And he takes a vow and he says, Hashem, if you bring me back, you take care of me, and you give me to eat and clothing then to wear, then if I make it back in peace, I will make this a place of worship to Hashem. And I will give a tithe. And then he goes to Haran. He comes to a well. There are three shepherds of sheep by the well. And Yaakov asks them, where are you guys from? They say, Haran. He says, do you guys know Lavan? They say, we know him. He says, is everything okay by him? They say, yeah, here's Rachel's daughter's coming here. He says, why don't you guys just give your sheep to drink and keep going? It's early. And they say, no, we're waiting. All the shepherds gather. And then they roll off the stone from the well. And then we give our sheep to drink. So Rachel approaches, and Yaakov sees her with the sheep, and he runs, and he goes and single-handedly takes the stone off the well, and he gives the sheep to drink. And after he's given the sheep to drink, so then he has this young niece, young cousin there, he kisses her hand and weeps, and he tells her that they're relatives, and she runs home. She tells her father, Lavan comes out, he hugs him, he kisses him, and he tries to see, hey, where's all his money? And Yaakov's penniless. We'll figure out why soon. So Lavan says, come in, we're relatives. He spends a month there. And then Lavan asks him, look, you're taking care of my sheep all this time. What wages would you like? Yaakov says, I'll work 7 years for your little daughter, Rachel. And Lavan says, it's a deal. Why should I give her to someone else? Better I give her to you. So Yaakov works for 7 years. And then at the end of 7 years, Lavan makes a party, invites everyone in. And then when the wedding comes, he puts the veil over Leah, brings her in, and Yaakov marries her. He's with Leah. The next morning, Yaakov sees, hey, it's Leah. He comes to Lavan and says, what'd you do to me? We agreed on Rachel. Why'd you trick me? Lavan says, no, our custom here is we don't marry off the young one for the older one, so you have to marry the older one first, and now you'll work, spend the week partying with Leah, and then afterwards I'll give you Rachel, and you'll work another 7 years for him. Okay, Leah has a child. She calls him Reuven. Hashem has seen my affliction. Maybe now my husband will love me as much as he loves Rachel. She has another child. She names him Shimon. Maybe now Hashem will hear that I'm not as beloved as my sister Rachel. She has another child. She names him Levi. She says, maybe now my husband will accompany me. I've given him three children, so now we're a family. She has another child. She says, now I really have to give thanks to Hashem. I've gone beyond the basic. Names him Yehuda. Rachel sees she can't have kids, so she tells Yaakov, give me kids or I'm dead. And Yaakov says, what do you want from me? My God, you can't have kids. Talk to God. It's your problem. So she says, okay, take my maid Bilha, and then I'll have kids. And she has a child from Bilha. She names him Dan. Hashem has judged me favorably. He's given me a child. Bilha has another child, and she says, I'm catching up. I'm matching up with my sister. So that's why she calls him Naphtali. And Leah sees that time is passing. A year after year, she isn't having kids. So she also gives her maid to Yaakov. And Lavan is watching all this on the sidelines. And he's wondering, why is my son-in-law marrying more and more women? And he doesn't realize that it's his daughters that are doing it. Let's just finish the parsha and then we'll talk. And when Zilpah has a child, so Leah hopes maybe now her fortune is going to turn better. She has another child, so she calls him God, which means good luck. And then she has another child, and she says, everyone's going to praise me. I have so many kids. And so she calls him Asher, which means praise, fortunate. Then we have the story of the Dudaim. Reuven picks these flowers that they believe will help a woman with fertility. And Rachel asks her sister, can I have some of your flowers? And Leah says, you know, you took my husband's heart. Now you're going to take the flowers my son brings me. Rachel says, fine, you could have the husband tonight, but give me those flowers. Rachel's dying to have kids. And Yaakov comes home and he's headed towards Rachel. And Leah comes out and tells him, no, tonight I've bought you, so to speak, with my son's flowers. So that night he spends with Leah, and Leah's been praying, and she has a child, and she names him Yisachar, which means wages. I've bought you, you know, I've paid for this child. And finally she has a sixth child, and she says, this child must be because I gave my servant to my husband, and that's why she called him, the fifth child was because I gave my child to my servant to my husband. That's why she named him Yisachar. And the sixth child was because Hashem endowed her. So that's Zeved, and that's why she called him Zivulun. She has a daughter named Dina. And finally, everyone's praying for Rachel, and Rachel has a child, and she prays. She says, Hashem should give me another kid, right? Hashem gathered my shame, Yosef, together. And then Yaakov tells Lavan, time to go. And Lavan says, no, I want you to stick around. Let's make a deal. They make a deal, and Lavan keeps trying to cheat Yaakov. And finally, Yaakov sees that Lavan is losing all his money, and Yaakov's becoming super wealthy, in spite of the fact that Lavan's cheating on the deal all the time. And Hashem tells Yaakov, time to go. Yaakov calls out his wives out to the field, and he tells them, look, things are going really bad. Your father doesn't like me anymore. Your brothers are out to get me. And Hashem told me it's time to go back to Israel. You know, I had a dream in my sleep. I saw angels are helping me moving the sheep around the way they should be. But at the end of the day, Hashem tells me it's time to go back to Israel. So they say, look, we've been suffering out here. Our father's trying to rob us blind. Of course, we should go back to Israel like Hashem said. And Yaakov takes everyone in the middle of the night. Rachel, his wife, steals the trophim. And Lavan hears of it, and he gives chase. And he finally catches up to Yaakov, and he says, what kind of foolish thing did you do? Run away. You didn't give me a chance to kiss everyone goodbye. I would have made a party. We would have been happy as you've left. But I really want to harm you. But last night, your God appeared to me and told me not to harm you. So, look, I can understand. You suddenly missed your family. You left. Why'd you take my God? Why'd you take my truffman? And Yaakov says, look, I had to leave without you knowing because I was scared you'd steal everything from me. And as far as your God, check everything you want. I haven't taken a thing from you. For sure not your God. If anyone stole your God, then they're dead. And so Lavan checks everywhere, and he keeps checking Rachel's tent again and again. He checks Rachel, and then Leah, and then Rachel, and then Bilhah, and then Rachel, and then Zilpah. Every time he keeps going back to Rachel's tent because he suspects Rachel. And Rachel's sitting on the camel, and under the camel's seat is the trough in this idol. And Lavan can't find it. She says, you know, I'm sorry, it's that time of the month. I can't walk around. That's why I have to sit there. So her father says, fine, of course, you stay seated. And so she's hiding the trophim. And Yaakov tells Lavan, you know, what'd you run after me for? You checked all my belongings. Did you find a spoon of yours? Did you find one shoelace I took from your house? You know, I've worked so hard all this time to be honest with you. And you've cheated me every time, this time and that time. For 20 years I've been at your house, and I've never brought any excuses. I've always delivered day and night. I've barely slept, heat or cold. After all this time, Hashem took care of me, because otherwise I would have left you clean of anything. And Lavan tells him, look, everything you got is all thanks to me, everything you see here. Let's make a covenant. I won't harm you, you won't harm me. They build a pile of rocks, they stick a knife in the rocks, they stick a sword inside, and they say, anyone that crosses this pile of rocks to harm the other one should be killed by this sword. And then Lavan goes home, and Yaakov starts heading back to Israel, and he sees angels greeting him. So our parsha begins with angels and ends with angels. And now we'll start the parsha again and see what's going on. Yes, Daniel.
I heard that there's also another meaning to a woman's name, that it refers that he saved Yosef.
Very nice. Yeah. Talmud says that.
Get a name that refers something to that's special, because normally people get a name according to an event that happened to their heart.
Okay, so that the Talmud asked that question. Maybe we'll get to that later.
Rabbi,
yeah.
Do we have a tradition that Laban is the forefather of a certain nation, like Esav is to Edom and to?
Maybe we'll get to that too. Yes.
In the same context about Laban, so when he tries to trick in giving Leah, right? So it means that somehow he knew the character traits of his daughter. They have a siman. If Rachel wouldn't give the siman to Leah, whatever the trick he was trying to play wouldn't work.
Okay.
Some parashan who talks about this, or it's not that important.
Yes, it's also discussed.
For Thursday.
I don't remember who discussed it, so I can't help you on Thursday either. It is discussed. Okay, so we learned in last week's parsha that Yaakov left. In this week's parsha, the Torah reiterates that the Torah is pointing out that when a tzaddik leaves the place, it affects the place. But you know what? You could live in the city where the tzaddik is, and you could ignore his existence. If you want to benefit from a tzaddik's existence, should tap into it. I found that there are many Talmidei Chachamim who no one takes advantage of. Talmidei Chachamim will sometimes conclude a class and then go home, and people don't walk them home. You can really tap in and benefit, glean from the wisdom, learn from people who are learned. There's a Talmud Chacham who I try to accompany numerous times a week, and he gives a class in a yeshiva. And at the end of the class, they take turns. Different guys walk him home. So they walk him to a certain point, and then I take over and I walk him. And it boggles my mind that the whole walk from the yeshiva till I meet the student who's accompanying him, they walk in silence. Like, these guys don't take advantage. You're dealing with a Torah giant. Ask him anything but gain from his wisdom. At least they're walking him. There's a lot to be taken advantage of. Chazal say when a tzaddik's in the city, he is the glory of the city. Hu ziva, hu hadara, he is the light of the city. Yeah, but you got to tap into that light. So Yaakov leaves Beersheva, and even though he's left behind Yitzchak and Rivka, so there are tzaddikim, but now there's one less tzaddik, and so the city feels different. And he comes to the place, he's going to daven. So Yaakov institutes the prayer of Arvit. Prayer of Arvit traditionally was davened just after sunset, just the way Yaakov does. Lechatchila, we prefer to wait until it's nighttime here in Israel. It's about 24 minutes after Shkia that we daven Ma'ariv. So the evening prayer is instituted by Yaakov. He's come to the temple, and he takes from the rocks that were the altar his father was bound upon. So he's taking Me'avnei HaMakom from the special rocks of the place. This is the altar Adam built and sacrificed on. This is the altar that Avram Avinu rebuilds in order to bind Yitzchak upon. And now Yaakov takes from some of those rocks, and he puts them around his head to protect himself. And overnight, the rocks are going to fuse. He takes 12 rocks because he's had on tradition that there are going to be 12 tribes from him. Our sages say that had Rebekah not complained in last week's parsha, when Rebekah said, "This is way too tough for me," the pregnancy, had she not complained, she would have been the mother of the 12 tribes. She did, so then the 12 tribes ended up coming from Yaakov. So Yaakov has a tradition that there are going to be 12 tribes, 12 forces within the Jewish people corresponding to the zodiac, to the 12 forces in the zodiac. And so Yaakov takes 12 stones, and when he awakens in the morning, it's one big slab that's to teach him an idea, the idea of unity of Am Yisrael, the idea that the Jewish people are going to be one, and every tribe is going to be existent forever. There's Brit Shvatim, there's a covenant with the tribes, that there will always be a representation of every tribe in Am Yisrael. We will never lose a tribe completely. So Yaakov goes to sleep and he dreams and he sees a ladder. The letters Sulam have the numerical value of Sinai. We have multiple interpretations in our sages as to what Yaakov Avinu saw in that vision. Some say he saw a vision of the four kingdoms that would rule the earth, the same way Nebuchadnezzar saw, the same way Abraham saw in the vision of Brit Min HaBetarim. Some say the word Sulam corresponds to Sinai, that Yaakov saw the vision of how the Jewish people would have this great revelation at Sinai. The whole people would see prophecy, and they would forever be changed. There would be a Jewish people that know that Hashem is real and know that Hashem has given prophecy to the world, and there are going to be angels, the people of Israel, who have Moshe and Aaron, who ascend the mountain. They go up the mountain, Moshe and Aaron. We view that simply, but that's an amazing thing that people can approach and access the place where Hashem gives prophecy from. Moshe goes up to heaven for 40 days and 40 nights. So others say he saw the four kingdoms. He saw the angels representing each kingdom going up and going down, going up and going down, until he saw the angel of Esav go up the ladder and not come down. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, what's going to be? Hashem says, go take him down. Yaakov's scared. Hashem says, okay, you were scared. That's what's going to be in life. Esav's going to go up and up and up and up, and it's going to seem like it's eternal, until finally Hashem says, I'm going to take him down. So then Hashem tells Yaakov, you climb the ladder. And Yaakov hesitates. He says, maybe if I go up, then I'm going to come down, just like all the other angels, just like all the other nations had an up and not and down. Hashem says, you hesitated, you waited, and I told you to go. And that's why there's going to be a long pause before the people of Israel ascend that ladder and have dominion, have rulership, have sovereignty on earth. And so Yaakov, but when you go up, you won't go down. There's the Mashiach, that vision that Nebuchadnezzar sees in the book of Daniel. There is going to be a time when a king will enter Israel and he will take the rulership and he'll never lose it. The rulership will remain. So Yaakov sees this awesome vision of a ladder. And he sees angels going up and angels going down. The angels going up are the angels who accompanied him from the land of Israel. The angels going down are the angels of Chutz La'aretz. When a person is in Eretz Yisrael, he has special angels that accompany him. We know that a person's Hashgacha Pratit is contingent on the person's own level. When a person is a big tzaddik, he has greater Hashgacha Pratit. It's also contingent on location. When a person is in Israel, then he has greater Hashgacha Pratit than Chutz La'aretz. It's also contingent on time. On Shabbos, we have special angels, right? Shalom Aleichem. We sing to the angels that have come in honor of Shabbos. Tzeischem L'shalom. We tell the angels that have left us, the weekday angels. Every person has what we call angels that accompany him, Malachei Asharet, all the time. And Yaakov is on the level where he could see them ascend the ladder. Those Eretz Yisrael angels are ascending. The Chutz La'aretz angels are coming down. And Hashem tells him, I am the God of your forefathers. So this is his first prophetic vision. He spent 14 years learning in yeshiva, and he never went to sleep. Our sages say that night he left yeshiva, he's en route, he goes to sleep. Hashem has to be over him, protecting him. Why? Because the angels went down and went up, went down and went up. What were they going down and up for? In heaven, there's a picture of Moshe, of Yaakov Avinu. In the book of Ezekiel, it describes Hashem's throne as having different types of angels supporting it. And one of the angels has four faces and four directions. One of the directions has the face of a human. The face of a human is the face of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is the term Ish. Yaakov, Esav, twin brothers, they are both called Ish. Esav is Ish Tzayid, the man who's a hunter. He's all about the physical. Yaakov is Ish Tam, the man of wholeness, the man of truth, the man who represents the wholeness on planet Earth. So the angels go up to heaven and they see the picture of Yaakov, so to speak. And then they go down and they look at Yaakov Avinu and he's sleeping, so they want to kill him. They say, you have such potential. This is what you're doing. You're going to sleep. Now, mind you, 14 years, he never went to sleep in a bed. His sleep would always be in base medicine. He's put his head down and then get up and keep learning. But now, after 14 years, one night, he goes to sleep. So the angels come down and say, he's wasting his time. They're ready to kill him. Hashem was on top of Yaakov protecting him. And so Hashem tells him, I'm with you. You see the land you have? That's yours. And from here, you only have to expand. In ancient times, when you wanted to reward a knight, you would give him a small territory and you tell him, okay, bring your army there, that's yours. Now you have to conquer everything around and that'll be yours too. So Hashem tells Yaakov Avinu, you could have that small piece of land you were sleeping on, it's yours. Now you just have to expand. The rest is yours. Ufaratzta, you will expand, as the Rebbe of Chabad used to sing. Oh, you guys all know the song. Yaakov Avinu is given a land without limitations. It's called Nachala B'limitzarim. He who keeps Shabbos is given an amount without limits. And that's what Hashem tells Yaakov Avinu. You will conquer beyond limits. Hashem says, I am with you and I will protect you and I'm going to bring you back. So why is Yaakov worried in next week's parsha what's going to happen? Because there are two types of prophecy. There's prophecy that's given to give over to other people. And then we say, if the prophecy is a prophecy for good, then Hashem doesn't go back on the prophecy. You don't have to worry. But if the prophecy is a personal prophecy, like this prophecy, where Hashem tells Yaakov Avinu, I will be with you, things will be good, you will come back, Yaakov Avinu has to be concerned. It's not a public prophecy. Then even though it's a prophecy for good, Hashem might turn back on the prophecy. Next week, we'll have to discuss other reasons why Yaakov Avinu was scared. This is Maimonides' explanation. Gentlemen, am I talking too fast or can I keep up at this pace? I can keep up at this pace? Let's go on. So, Yaakov gets this wonderful promise. He gets up and he says, wow, this is an amazing place. Zeh Shaar Shamayim, this is the gates to heaven. So simple reading, the temple is the gates to heaven. Broader reading, our tradition is Jerusalem is the gates to heaven. Our sages say he who prays in Jerusalem, it's as though he's praying before Hashem. The term lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, has multiple meanings. One meaning means in the Holy of Holies. The other one means in the temple. And the third meaning means Jerusalem. And the fourth meaning means the land of Israel. Each one is a different level of holiness. But the whole Jerusalem has a level of holiness that's called lifnei Hashem. And that's what Yaakov Avinu says, this is the gates to heaven. Jerusalem is called the gates to heaven. Yerushalayim. Why is it multiple? Because there's a Yerushalayim in heaven and in earth corresponding. Yes, sir. So we'll leave for then. Okay, yes. I cannot address that tonight. Onward. Yes. Right, good assumption. So Yaakov wakes up early, he takes that stone and he pours oil over it. Where do you have oil from? So we have a few things in Tanakh that show up all over Jewish history. There are a few things. There's that staff that Adam had in the Garden of Eden that came out of the Garden of Eden and has the donkey. There's the garment of Esav. And there's this oil, this flask of oil. There's also the wine that comes out of the Garden of Eden that accompanies Lot into the cave that will accompany... Okay. That Noach drinks from, that Lot drinks from. Okay, and there's this flask of oil that shows up over here and will show up in a few other places. Moshe Rabbeinu will have it until finally in Hanukkah, this flask of oil will show up. So we have a tradition that there's a miraculous flask that shows up in the right place at the right time. So he pours oil on this rock. Now, Yaakov Avinu is running away from home. And the Talmud tells us what happens if a woman is drowning, she's without clothing, and a man sees her drowning, and he says, I can't look, it's not modest. So the Talmud says, that's called a chassid shoteh, a fool who tries to be pious. So Esav sends his grandson Eliphaz, his son Eliphaz, he tells him, run and kill Yaakov. So Eliphaz catches up to Yaakov, and he holds him at gunpoint and says, I have to kill you, Dad said so. Yaakov says, what do you mean? He says, you know, our family, we're big into kibbutz. Whatever Dad says, we do. So I got to kill you. So Yaakov says, really? That's how it works? Okay, so let me tell you. If you're doing it for kibbutz, so then in Halacha and in Torah, we say that if a person's poor, being poor, it's as though you're dead. So you could take all my money and you could tell Dad, you killed me. Eliphaz says, really? Great. Okay, so Eliphaz takes his money and walks off. So you look at that and you say, what's wrong with the man? So I'll tell you what's wrong with him. When you do Torah, when you learn Torah, and you remove all intellect and all common sense, and you say, whatever it says I'm going to do, and I don't have to think twice, then you can end up doing really stupid things. There was a guy whose wife said he's crazy. She needs a divorce. They asked him, why is he crazy? She said, every Friday night comes Kiddush. He sticks his two eyes into the cup of wine and then makes Kiddush. So they asked the guy, is that true? He says, yes. They said, why? He said, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to yiten enough because shabracha. You should put your eyes in the cup of as you make a blessing. So it means you should look at the cup. But he understood me. Put your eyes in the cup. Now, wait a second, buddy. Wait. There are people all around. Did you ever see someone do it? No, but okay, that's what it says in Halacha. So he doesn't think twice, that's what he does. Well, you should think for a second, ask a question. So Eliphaz doesn't think twice. He comes and says, that's it, so I have to do it. Keep it out of aim. I don't ask too many questions. So Yaakov says, okay, you want to deal with me in that kind of attitude? So I'll work with you with that kind of attitude. Take my money. Halachically, you did your dad's wishes, you did your keep it out of aim. So we have to be a little bit careful as we learn Torah. We have to observe the Torah. We have to do in accordance with the Torah. We also have to ask questions. Wait, is this really what the Torah wants of me? Let me check this out a little bit better. So Eliphaz doesn't do that. He just goes with the letter of the law, and that's not the way to work. Yes, sir.
Was Eliphaz a good person? It seems to me,
No. Right. Okay. Doesn't sound like such a great guy, right? Okay, so I guess that makes him into a tzaddik, right?
Not necessarily a tzaddik, but it seems like he has like some
redeeming quality.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess. Yaakov used to teach him. He's coming to his rabbi and saying, sorry, I got to kill you, right? Yaakov is penniless, and he's heading out to Lavan. and he takes on a vow. Now, our sages say whenever you're in a time of danger, you could take a vow, but in general, it's not recommended to take a vow. A vow is a very dangerous thing. Yaakov's going to pay a hefty price for this vow. His brother Esav's going to attack him. Shechem is going to abduct his daughter. His wife Rachel is going to die. He's going to suffer terribly, and it's all because he took a vow and he wasn't quick enough to keep it. Our sages say that vows are very lethal. They're very dangerous, and that's why it's not recommended to take a vow. But Yaakov makes a mistake, so he takes on a vow, and he says, Hashem should be with me and protect me. Our sages say each of these is a reference to a mitzvah. Hashem should be with me, I should maintain my monotheism, I should maintain my religiosity, because I could easily veer astray. I should be careful, I shouldn't transgress the Noahide laws. I should be careful, I shouldn't go with women I'm prohibited from. Every one of these is a prayer about being honest, about being faithful to the values that he cherishes. And that's the wisdom of the giants, like Yaakov Avinu. We tend to think about ourselves, I know what I'm doing, I'm great, I got no problem, I could go to Chutz Arts, I could go to university, I could go to any environment, sure, I'll be fine. It's not true, it's foolish. The environment affects everyone, even giants like Yaakov Avinu. See, Yaakov Avinu has to pray, where I go, let me remain a monotheist. Rabbon Shalom, I have to leave the environment of my father, my family. I need to pray, things should work out right, because who knows where I could end up. Every person who's intelligent realizes that they should be concerned. We are influenced, and a person can never be too sure where they will end up. So Yaakov Avinu prays over this. He says, Hashem, give me food to eat and clothing to wear. Sometimes a person has food, they can't eat it. Sometimes a person has clothing, they can't wear it. He prays he should have both food to eat and clothing to wear. And that's not a simple thing. We take it for granted, but it's really not simple. So Yaakov prays, I should come home to my father in peace, and Hashem, I will tithe. He says, Asera Asrenu. He uses a double term for tithing, and from there we learn that when a person's wealthy, they can give a double tithe. You can give 20% when you're wealthy. He says, I will erect a place of worship for Hashem. And with that, we're at Cheney. Yes?
Isn't it weird that he poses like a conditionality between having Hashem as a God and
that's not what I said. Right, so your interpretation, you have a question. So it's a question on your interpretation.
Yeah, it's a question.
Okay, so I ask you, don't ask me.
I mean, it's, by the way it's read, the way it's written, one could be led to think this way. I know it's not. And who would think that Jacob would put like conditionality of having Hashem as a God? But
Thursday night. It's a good question. Thursday night. Good. I recommend you write the questions down. It's a good idea. Go ahead. What?
I have a long list.
Good.
Put
everyone's, yeah? So, Yaakov's heading eastward. And he comes, he sees three shepherds by the well. That should concern us. Why does the Torah bother telling us this whole story? Obviously, there's greater depth here. And Yaakov approaches them, says, brothers, where are you from? We're from Haran. Do you know Lavan, the son of Nahor, even though he's Nahor's grandson? They say, yes. Is peace by him? Yes, he's peace. And there's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. So Seder Olam Rabba writes that Rachel and Leah were 22 years old and they were twin sisters. That's one shot you guys should know. Seder Olam Rabba by Rav Yossi Bar Chalafta. It's a Praisa. Tanai quote says Rachel and Leah were twin sisters. They were both 22 years of age. They had two sisters from concubines. Lavan had concubines, and from them he had two other daughters, Bilhah and Zilpah, who were much younger of age. Pilegish. Pilegish is from Plagisha, half a woman. In other words, a regular wife, one signs a contract with what we call a ksuba, where one obligates oneself that if they separate, he will give her a large amount of support. A Pilegish is a woman where she is not sleeping with other men. She has designated herself to this man, but he has not obligated himself to her on a large sum of money. They do not have a ksuba between them. So they have Kiddushin. She is designated. She has accepted to be his designated Pilegesh. But when they decide to split paths, whatever gifts he's given her to that point, she has. But he doesn't owe her anything.
Can we still do this nowadays?
No, we may not have Pilagshim today. And I will not say who asked the question. So that you can find the Shidduch in the future. Yes? Okay. So, our sages up the notch over and over again as to man's obligations in the Ksuba throughout the generations, because many men thought that's a good deal. And even though they made a Ksuba, men thought, ah, I have the money on the side. Be gone with you. Here, have your money. Goodbye. So our sages made it harder and harder because men are so problematic and we need all this encouragement to stay wed. In the long run, it's in our interest. But there are many institutions in the Ksuba that are there specifically to protect the woman from fickle and unappreciative man. Man has a weakness that he doesn't appreciate what he's got. So part of the Ksuba is to force us to appreciate and not to be quick to give up on all the wonderful gifts we have within marriage. So we continue. So they tell him we need all the shepherds together to uncover the well. And when Rachel comes, he personally uncovers the well. And here you have an overt pasuk that indicates how powerful Yaakov was. Yeah. On a deeper level, it couldn't. We learned yesterday that the sheep can be understood to mean the people of Israel, the future of Israel, within the story. So on that level, it could be that the well also has a different meaning. Yes. So, Yaakov speaks to Rachel. And the two of them hit it off right away. They right away sense that they're meant to be together. We discussed earlier tonight in the other classes about love at first sight. So Yaakov and Rachel sense right away they're meant to be together. Now, the world has been talking that Yaakov and Rachel are meant to be together because people kept saying, here are the two cousins. You have twin brothers in Israel, twin sisters in Haran. So obviously the older girl will go for the older guy, the younger girl will go for the younger guy. And so Rachel is always happy because everyone's been talking ever since she's a kid. Everyone's been saying that she's going to marry Yaakov. So here Yaakov walks in out of the sunrise and not out of the sunset. Yaakov walks into town, it's early, and they meet at the well. Or say, just say it's always a good sign if you come to the well and the girls of the city are coming out to greet you. It's a good way. It's a good place to find your shidduch at the well. I guess that would be today's water fountain, right? Yaakov and Rachel talk, and then Yaakov tells Rachel that he's going to talk to her father about marrying her. And Rachel says, but you know, my father's a swindler. And Yaakov says, well, I could swindle too. And Rachel says, I thought you're a learned, pious person. Are learned, pious people allowed to swindle? So Yaakov says, well, it says if you're dealing with a swindler, you have to know how to swindle too. I can take him on. I can be just as good as him. So Rachel says, fine. Yaakov tells her, okay, but just in case, here's the sign. A Jewish woman has three mitzvot. The acronym is Chana. Chala nida adlaka saner. When you'll be my wife, your mitzvot will be Chala, to take off a portion to give to the kohen. Nida, the laws of family purity, and to light the candle in honor of Shabbos. That's a woman's responsibility in the home. Those are her mitzvot. So he tells her, this is the sign. When I come under the chuppah, I'm going to ask you, what's the sign? You're going to have to tell me those three mitzvot. So Lavan hears that Yaakov's in town. He's sure that Yaakov's coming in with a lot of wealth, and he's going to find the way to get it out of him. So he comes outside, and he sees Yaakov's without anything. He figures maybe he's hid the money on him. So he hugs him all over, and he can't find it. Now, in ancient times, when you gave a kiss that meant it, they'd kiss mouth to mouth, even between men. So Lavan tells him, I'm so happy to see you, and he kisses him mouth to mouth. And he's trying to find, maybe he's got jewelry in his mouth, and he came, nothing. Yaakov's penniless. He says to himself, maybe he's buried it somewhere. He's keeping his money hidden. He didn't want to walk into town with all the money. So he takes him in and he waits a month to see if some of this money is going to show up. Nothing shows up. He says, I don't get it. His grandfather's slave came into town with 10 camels with such wealth. Everyone's still talking about it. And now he comes in. He's the grandson. He doesn't have anything. So Yaakov tells him, look, here's the deal. Here's what happened with me and Esav. And Esav sends him a letter telling him, oh, my brother Yaakov, I'm still going to kill him. You're going to help me. We're going to kill him together. Look at what he's done to me. And after Lavan hears the whole story, so he says, okay, your family, fine. Let's see. Yaakov starts taking care of the sheep, and things turn up right away. All the years, Lavan couldn't have a boy. Then his wife gets pregnant. She has a boy. All the years, Lavan's cattle kept dying and being disease-ridden. Yaakov starts taking care of them. Things turn up. Lavan's finances turn up. And Yaakov tells him, I'll work you 7 years for Rachel, your young daughter. He says, your young one, in case he switches the names Leah for Rachel, the old one for the younger one. He says, your daughter, in case he brings a girl from the marketplace and says, she's called Rachel, we agreed Rachel, but you didn't say which Rachel. So he tries in every way to corner it. Rachel, your young daughter. Great. After 7 years, he says to Lavan, the time's up. Let me marry my wife. Lavan says, fine, we'll make a party. Figures he'll get Yaakov drunk. He'll have all the townsmen there. And after he swindles Yaakov, if Yaakov tries to make a fuss, Lavan will say, look, everyone's here, and everyone knows the laws, and everyone's backing me on it, and everyone knows what Lavan's doing. And we'll pick up here in a second. Yes?
Leah said that he didn't know the whole Torah. He knew the whole Torah, he would have wrote that Tuba.
Ah.
And he wouldn't have been in that mess.
Very nice, I hear. So, it's late in the evening, they dim the lights. Lavan comes into the room and says, Leah, you're going out. Rachel, give her the wedding dress. And Rachel stands there in stunned silence. Her whole life she's been dreaming she's going to marry Yaakov. She's been waiting for this night. And Leah, her whole life, has been weeping because she thinks she's going to marry Esav. And they don't know what to do. Rachel gives her the dress. And Rachel tells her, look, when you go out there, Yaakov's going to ask you for a sign. Here's the sign. And she tells her the three mitzvos. Rachel figures, I'm not going to let my sister get all embarrassed. We can't do anything. Our father's running the show here. Let me ensure she doesn't get embarrassed. So Lavan takes the younger servant, Zilpah, which should have been his gift to his younger daughter, Rachel, and he gives her to Leah so that Yaakov will think it's the younger daughter. And as she walks down the aisle, the men in town decide they're going to start teasing Lavan. So they start singing a song. He Leah, he Leah, he Leah, he Leah. She is Leah, she's Leah. Yaakov doesn't catch the hint. So she comes under the chuppah, and Yaakov asks her for the sign. She tells him he marries her, and they go to sleep that night. And every question he asks her, she answers as though she's Rachel. The next morning, he sees she's Leah. He says, wait a second, all night long I spoke to you, I said, Rachel, you answered me. How come? Now you're suddenly Leah? And Leah says, Yaakov says, Rachel must be pious, she gave you the sign, but what about you? Leah says, I wanted to marry you. You're a righteous person. I had an opportunity to be a part of the dynasty of the people of Israel. And Yaakov says, all night long, I say, Rachel, you answer. Leah says, I heard of a pious person whose father said Esav, and he answered.
Teach you not to argue with women. The Kohen has spoken.
Leah wins the argument, but she hasn't won Yaakov's heart. Sometimes in life, if you win the argument, you lose the connection. And so Yaakov charges Lavan and says, what'd you do to me? This is not what we agreed. Why'd you trick me? Notice Yaakov thinks he can out-trick Lavan, right? It's not going to work. Lavan says, that's not our custom here. Everyone was there. Everyone knew it. This is what goes on here. We don't marry off the first one. And you'll notice that with Leah's marriage, there's a party. He wants Yaakov to drink a little bit. He wants Yaakov to be off guard. When he marries off Rachel, he doesn't make any party. So you could say he was embarrassed from the townspeople, or you can say he really didn't care to make a party. His whole point was to trick Yaakov into it. Now, from this concept that love that the Torah records, finish this week of celebration, then we'll have another wedding. We learn a concept in Me'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We don't mix two happiness. We don't mix two celebrations. So, Leah should not ordinarily get pregnant. We have a tradition that when a woman's a virgin, she doesn't easily get pregnant from the first time she's with her husband. And Leah does. It's unnatural. And Yaakov recognizes, he's contemplating, should I stay married to her or not? What kind of behavior is this? And he sees it's unnatural. She became pregnant. And naturally, she should not have become pregnant. So Yaakov realizes this is God's will, and he remains married to Leah. But his true love is for Rachel. Now, when Yaakov marries Leah, word goes out all across the world, and Lavan has tricked Yaakov, and Esav hears of this. So Esav says, gee, two sisters, big one for big brother, little one for little brother. Well, little brother took big sister. So guess what? Little sister is mine. He took my wife, I get his wife. And Esav chuckles. And he lets it be known that his intent is to take Rachel for his wife. And when Rachel hears this, she shudders. She's scared, and she will spend the next decade and a half in fear of Esav, because she never knows when Esav might come down and not only claim Yaakov's life, but also claim that Rachel is rightfully his, because everyone knows Leah was supposed to be his. So if Yaakov took Leah, he certainly shouldn't get both sisters.
She has no say?
Well, that's a good question. Yes?
I have a question, because they say Dina, if Esav married Dina, he should have made tshuva. And Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov, and Leah was supposed to marry Esav. So, is it only us who knows about this? Or did anyone know about it in the Torah that Esav could have made tshuva to
Dina? I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting that when Yaakov loves Rachel more than Leah, Leah feels like she's hated. And that's the way women are. You will see. If I wish you don't have to see, but that's the way it works. If a woman ever feels like you have greater compassion for something other than her, then she feels hated. You don't love me, you hate me. You'll see that in Tanakh. You see it in Aesop's Fables. It's a recurring theme in life. A woman always has to feel like she's number one. If she feels like you prefer learning Torah, if she feels like you prefer anything to her, then that's a feeling that's very hard for a woman. So Leah feels like she's hated. Yaakov loves her. He just loves Rachel more, but she can't live with it. You know what? For men, it's not easy either. Yes, men usually run into it with their father-in-law. They see that their wife is still very loyal to her mother, to her father, and then they have issue with that. That's where men run into it. Yes?
Regarding the same topic, we have two difficulties here in the same. First one is, because it says that Hashem saw that she was the hated one. So Hashem saw it, means that. And then it's about the Lashon Sina, it's like very strong. How can hate be used in this context?
First of all, who said the word Sina means hate the way we're used to using it? That's number one. Number two, it could be that initially the term hate was because he didn't see a way to view her positively. Here she was taking her sister's dream from her, taking his dream from her, until he realized she had done it for pious reasons. And so the Radak and the Ramban quotes it that over here, it's the way we discussed. To feel hated doesn't necessarily mean the other party hates. Could be the other party has brought themselves to love. But it's not the same love. He didn't want to marry her. He loved her. He loved Rachel more.
So Hashem saw she was
Yeah, that's what I said, that there could be a difference between the first term snua and Rachel's term of snua, and Leah's term of snua. Okay.
Are Levan and Jacob the same age, more or less?
Who?
Levan and Yaakov. Right, Yaakov's like 60. He has 20-year-old daughters.
Levan was already born when he came to find the wife for Yitzhak.
Right, so Levan is much older than Yaakov. Because, right, Levan was Yaakov's mother's big brother, right? He's Rebecca's older brother. So Levan is much older than Yaakov. What? He's his uncle, right. Levan is Yaakov's uncle. He's much older than Yaakov. So if Yaakov is in his 60s, Levan is at least in his 70s. Okay, so we move forward to the story of the Dudaim. We have different interpretations here. Some commentaries learn that the Dudaim actually work, and the Dudaim, those special flowers that Reuven brings for his mother, Leah. You should notice that the tribes were all preemies. If there were so many children born within 7 years, so all of them were born prematurely. They were all born in 7 months. But they were very powerful. And Leah and Rachel, according to many opinions, were very, very young. So were Bilhah and Zilpah. So Reuven brings her these special flowers called Dudaim. One opinion is that the Dudaim work. They worked for Leah, and so they didn't work for Rachel. Another opinion is that they worked for Leah, and they lost their potency, so they wouldn't work for Rachel. A third opinion says the Dudaim don't work at all. It's old wives' tales, but Rachel had hope for it. So Leah, so to speak, purchases her rights to be with Yaakov that night. Our sages say it was immodest that Leah went out to greet him and said, come to me, I purchased you with my son's flowers. Later on, she was punished for that. So our sages say that's not the way a person should speak. And in fact, our sages align Dinah's behavior with Leah's behavior. That Dinah should have been a drop more modest, and Dinah went out where there was a dance party that ultimately she got abducted in. So even though it was a girl's dance party, but you see, the prince did show up to the dance party and abducted Dina. Our sages say this goes back to what she saw at home, to her mother going out to greet her father, that was a little bit less than modest. We're talking about people that we don't begin to understand their levels of piety and modesty. And yet our sages say, from a simplistic perspective, this is a lesson we're supposed to learn from the story. When Rachel can't have children, remember, Rachel tells Yaakov, give me kids or I'm dead. Our sages say when a person doesn't have children, so that is considered as though they're dead. Part of life is the capacity to influence the world. The term chayim means capacity to influence. And when a person has children, so then they have greater capacity to influence. The term chayim also means continuum. Maim chayim is water that has a stream, that has a continuous flow. When a person has children, there's a continuum. Aside from that, there's a critical difference between men and women. Men want children, but if they don't have children, they find satisfaction in other areas of life. Women want children, and if they don't have children, they feel like there's no point to living. Men get very frustrated. They say, our relationship is worth a lot. What do you mean? Our marriage is only so that I can be a baby-producing machine? What's going on here? No, women value the relationship, and even so, women were built with this built-in desire to have children. A woman feels fulfilled when she's brought children to the world. When a woman can't have children, it's probably the greatest suffering a woman can have. I don't know if greatest, but close to the greatest. Our sages say that Yaakov's answer to Rachel was wrong. Yaakov tells her, am I instead of God? God withheld children from you. Our sages say that in Rachel's suffering, Yaakov should have answered her more gently. So here we see an important concept. Sometimes a woman will come to a man and she'll claim against him something that's completely illegitimate. Why didn't you give me children? Give me children or I'm going to die. So Yaakov's answer seems very logical to all us men, right? What do you want from me? No, that's not the answer. Even though she seems to be making claims against him, the answer is, I'm also hurting that we don't yet have children. That's the answer. The answer has to be a shared pain. Even though the presentation at first feels abrasive, why are you blaming me? She tells him, give me kids or I'm dying. So our sages say this was melodramatic, the way women will sometimes talk. I feel worthless if I don't have children. Our sages say, nonetheless, a person should have the sensitivity and answer her out of sensitivity. Even though, again, the natural male response is not that way.
He was punished for this.
He was, yes.
What was the consequence?
We'll get there, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, we'll get there. So, Leah gets pregnant the seventh time, and she's worried, hey, if I have a seventh child, then my sister Rachel won't even be like one of the maids. They each have two kids. I have six. We're supposed to hit 12. That means we're up to the 11th pregnancy. If I have a boy, so then Rachel will be left with one. So she prays, and our sages say Leah's strength is in prayer. So out of her prayer, the fetus turns into a female. That fetus was supposed to be male, and Leah's prayer caused it to switch and become female. One of the commentaries wants to say that that's why Dina was a tomboy. She was more inclined to go outside, to be active, because her initial makeup was to be a boy. Everyone starts praying for Rachel. Yaakov's been praying. Leah starts praying. Everyone's praying. And finally, Hashem answers her prayer. It doesn't say Hashem answered anyone else's prayer. Very often we ask other people to pray. We have to remember that Yafet filata chole al atzmo. One's own prayer for oneself carries a special weight. So she has a child. And she asks for another one. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Hashem should give me another one. Our sages say in Tanakh, whenever we have an addition, the addition is more than the prime principle. As much as Lavan tries to swindle Yaakov, Yaakov is honest in his dealings. He does everything within the letter of the law to be more successful. But it's all within the letter of the law. It's all within the contract agreement. Maimonides says what we learned from Yaakov Avinu is that one can succeed in business with being honest. Often we think you can only succeed with dishonesty. The Torah stresses that in spite of all the dishonesty of Lavan, Yaakov maintains his ish tam, his wholeness, his honesty, and Hashem shows him how he'll be successful nonetheless. It says that Lavan would switch the deal many times. They'd agree this type of stripe is Yaakov's and the rest are Lavan's. And then as the animal would become pregnant, Lavan would come back and say, I changed my mind. If the dots are by the feet and not by the rest of the animal, that's your animal. And then he'd come back and say, you know what, I changed my mind again. If the stripes are here, he changed his mind many times. And Hashem would foresee what the final line in the deal would be. And then Hashem would make sure that all the animals would come out like that. So Lavan would always end up shooting himself in the foot to the point where Lavan says, are you a prophet? How do you know what animals are going to be born? And in fact, Lavan was always shooting himself in the foot. Yaakov calls his wives out to the field. From here we learn about how you discuss private things. Very often people discuss private things and they don't realize that there's a window just behind them and there are people listening. People have to be careful. You talk in a room, you don't know who's listening outside the door. Where does Yaakov discuss these private matters? He goes out into the field where he could see all around him. And he could see there's no one else out there. And there he discusses with his wives the fact that God's told him to leave and that logically it makes sense to leave. Notice Yaakov's honesty. He first spells out why he partially would like to leave. He is partial. He is not impartial. He says, look, my interest is in leaving. We're finished here. There's nothing else we can get out of it. We can only lose by staying at this point. We're on the brink of losing all the time. And God told me to go. He doesn't begin from a religious perspective and say, God said so, we got to go. You know, a lot of people tell their wives, we have to make Aliyah. It's not because I love Israel. It's not because my friends are there. It's not because I want to live there. There's a mitzvah. We got to go. Come on, you're a religious person. We got to go. No, Yaakov's very honest. He says, look, this is my partiality. This is why it's in our interest. This is why I want to go. And God said so. What do his wives answer him? This is our partiality. We're losing by staying here. Our father's trying to rob us blind. He doesn't treat us any better. He's trying to take away anything we own. At the end of the day, of course you should listen to Hashem. So first they spell out their partiality. They're very honest. Then they say, of course, we want to listen to Hashem. That's an honest person. Yes?
I understand they live in the same house. Like how is Laban so easily able to abuse them and stuff?
Well, he would switch the deals on them, and that's how he'd find ways to try and take their money away.
I'm like, couldn't Yaakov just say, okay, it's it, I'm not going to speak anymore and stuff?
I guess not. I guess their finances were too intertwined. They were dealing with the same cattle. Yaakov was shepherding his cattle and Laban's cattle. He needed to find a way to split the deal. So Yaakov gets up and he takes all his wealth and he's traveling slowly to go back to Canaan. Now, what are the trophim? They would slaughter a firstborn human and then salt the skull and then do all kinds of idol worship with the skull until they could bring the skull to a point that it would talk and they could connect with the skull. Pagans like Laban. So they could connect with this skull. So Rachel, as she's running, she takes her father's truffin. She doesn't want him to figure out where they are. Why doesn't she bury it en route? Because she figures Laban with his sorcery can communicate with this skull and the skull will help him. He'll still be able to access it. So Rachel takes it along. Our sages say she took it along. One opinion is, as we discussed, to protect them so Laban won't be able to figure out where they are. The other opinion is that she took it because she hoped that if she takes it away, then maybe it will help her father realize the truth. Her father might do some tshuva. So Rachel takes it. Now our sages say that what she did was wrong. She's going to pay for it with her life. Yaakov says, whoever stole something from your house will die. Our sages say he cursed whoever took something from Laban's house. And that's why Rachel will die at childbirth because of this curse. So Laban gets word that Yaakov's left. And he gives chase. And he says, why don't you let me know? We would have made a party to see you off. Here we see the idea of making a party to see someone off. This is the only time in the book of Bereishis that the word simcha appears, where Laban says the term bisimcha, we would have sent you out with happiness. Hashem appeared to me last night. Here we see that non-Jews, even vile people like Laban, can have a dream and Hashem will appear to them on behalf of the tzaddik Yaakov and told me not to try to influence you to stick around. So fine, but what'd you steal my God for? Yaakov says, look around. I don't have anything of yours here. Here we see Yaakov's honesty that he didn't even have a spoon from Laban. Our sages say a son-in-law in his father-in-law's house always, you take some of mine, I take some of yours. Not Yaakov. That's Yaakov's honesty. Emet Li Yaakov. And Yaakov speaks about how he worked hard. Our sages say this teaches us what Parnassa is all about. You want to succeed in life? It's like Yaakov did. You work hard. People think if I'm a religious person, everything will work out right for me. I'll invest in a stock, it'll take off, and I'll be able to learn to all the rest of my life. Our sages say, no, learn from Yaakov. Yaakov had to work very hard. He describes 20 years working in the heat and the cold. That's how Parnassa works. In order for Parnassa to work, a person has to work hard. In our day and age, maybe you could do it in high tech. But it demands a dedication. That's a concept that's reiterated throughout the Torah, starting with Yaakov Avinu, who teaches us how to be an honest, dedicated worker.